Welcome back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, Almighty Baller, and Brian, the Nets are back.
If there was ever a time to have that drop, it would be now, but we don't have it. So
it is the perfect show because the Nets are back. And also, it's a good time to do the John Cena drop.
Because I know. This is bad. Yeah, we have a good killer comparison. But you know how I know the Nets are back, Mike?
Tell me, Brad.
There's a couple of little pieces of evidence that Nets are back. First and foremost, on NetsDaily.com, we have trolls from other teams shitposting, and it's amazing to have them back. You know?
How dare they?
It used to be other team, like Celtics fans would come over and be like, hey, really like what you guys are doing. Like, keep up the good stuff. And that's just like the most condescending. Like, that's like the perfect, like, ugh. And then you'd have these like well-meaning, like white knight Nets fans be like, thanks, man. You too. Me. It's like, now it's nothing.
Hey,
but
no hard
venom.
Feelings, man. No hard feelings.
and now it's on, dude. That's how I know we're back. And also we're like strategically throwing games again. That's it. We're jockeying for that playoff position because I've never seen a game thrown quite as hard as that Celtics game. Rodians, bless his heart, almost blew it for him. We were like trying to get Kenneth Faried his like monthly garbage minutes, and Rodians was shooting us into that game, and we had to yank him because we're like, no, well, Kenneth has got to get us. We'll be down 20 for Kenneth to get in.
I think the problem with Karutz is that the word tanking in Latvian translates to an explosion, right? It translates into like a great sort of no, but like if you're from another country and you were told to tank it, and if you knew what the word tank was, which most people would think of it as a tank,
right?
You would think tanking it would be exploding, going off, you know, having the game that he did. But the translation to him was him going off, when in reality we're throwing this game. By the way, love all you out there on Nets Twitter at BK Glue Guys. You got to follow. I tweeted out a couple of reprehensible things that I did not think people would take seriously, but I had tweeted out, speaking of tanking, that the Nets need to start considering possibly losing some games to move down a seed to start thinking about their playoff matchup, Brian.
that's and you know how we got there. So you yank Rhodey and you throw in the, you know how the Warriors have the death lineup?
Yes.
The like self-immolation lineup is Napier, Travion Graham, Ed Davis, Kenneth Faried, and Theo Pinson. that was a lineup that they had in for like a full 10 minutes in the second quarter. They're like, we are not here to win this game, guys.
A heavy heavy chunk of that, of course, the fourth quarter, they ended that way. They ended the game that way. And there was like a tiny morsel of a minute where like that lineup kind of almost had a comeback. There was like
chaosing their way into some kind of success. Like just Kenneth Faried going Napier for like Napier was the only guy that like understood. He's like, no, I'm going to chuck this ball out of bounds. We're losing this game.
He's everybody way else. Too heady for that lineup.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of got freaked out when who would have been the center in that lineup? Maybe Faried or whatever.
Ed Davis
fouls out at the end of the game, and Jared Allen has to go back in. And I was thinking, like, can't we just put anyone else? Just play with four.
Yeah, let's go small. That point, let's go small, guys.
Let's just because I'm dreading that this weird like end of game foul force Ed Davis is out, and then Jared Allen comes in and gets hurt, God forbid, in a game that ends up not meeting because the Nets essentially threw it because they just played Kenneth Faried a whole bunch of minutes, and Shabazz Napier I think got the most minutes of any guard out there.
We're scrutinizing this funny L, and we're feeling good about it because of the enormous success we've had lately. Mike, do you want to touch on that briefly just to let everybody know how we're thinking, what we're feeling? Or do you want to get into like, hey, we just had a long break, you know? We haven't really talked that much. Do you want to talk about that at all?
Well, you know, obviously I had my award-winning interview with Brooke Lopez that you all should listen to. I appreciate all of you who have listened to it, so thank you so much. Of course, the Nets, I think they're currently the 8th seed or 7th seed or something like that in the East. They have the sixth most wins in the East. They have 20 wins and 22 losses. The Nets are completely ascendant. They are, you know, one of the friskier teams right now in the East. They are probably the friskiest team, wouldn't you say, like outside like the very top tier?
They're the first round matchup nobody wants, Mike. That's where we are.
Can I just say, though, I do, of course, like, I know I jokingly tweet out that, like, the Nets need to maybe lose a game to consider who they want to play in the first round, but I look at every team that they would play in the first round, and I'm immediately disheartened. Like, I'm just, I don't know which matchup, like, which matchup would give you the most hope? Would it be the Bucks because maybe they won't shoot as well at three, or is it the Pacers because the Pacers aren't really
Pacers
that talented?
Come on, Pacers are, like, all over the place. We got that.
My problem with the Pacers, though, is that they are the Nets but more talented. Like, they play a smart, solid sound of basketball.
If we can get up there into the fifth seed, and we can't, but if we could, that Sixers matchup looked pretty good. I don't know. Something about that just seems to, like, they're, like, still a little too young. They're kind of – they're not, like, underperforming or whatever, but they're not, like, super-duper taking off. There's a little bit of, like, rumblings with the Jimmy Butler thing's not going super well in the locker room at the moment. Like, that feels like the weakest link to me.
The problem is that they have the most overwhelming piece of, like, any team besides Giannis in that they have Embiid, and that we sort of know what Embiid would do to the Nets over whatever amount of games.
Yeah. But do you take my point? Or are you just going to, like, glance right over it, or –
the fact that there's, like, internal strife with the...
Internal strife. Plus, also, we played them straight up and looked pretty good.
Yeah, both, I'm...
Three times.
But, yeah, so there is internal strife. I think that's just, like, the habit of being with Jimmy Butler. And obviously that matters, but I also... By the time the playoffs comes around, I would imagine there's enough mending of fences that, like, they would be able to kind of get their crap together. I don't know if you've been tracking this. There's a very weird Ben Simmons storyline that's been going out there lately. It's that he can't shoot jumpers, which he doesn't shoot jumpers. But that's become, should the Sixers trade Ben Simmons for Anthony Davis? Should the Sixers trade Ben Simmons for CJ McCollum and Nurkic or some other piece or something like that? I'm loving that, of course, bro. Like, you have to love that as an Eastern. Like, the fact that Philly doesn't have sort of the intestinal fortitude to withstand this sort of awkward arrangement that they have created for themselves, this arrangement where you brought in Jimmy Butler, a known malcontent, like completely not the type of player you want to have on your team right now. But they've brought him in, super talented. They brought him in to a situation that's sort of devoid of real leadership. There's just a sense out of Philly that there's like a little level of freak out, a little level of like,
yeah, for sure.
Maybe we do have to make this move. And maybe like we do have to, not that they're considering trading Ben Simmons, but I don't know, man. It's insane that there's even a conversation around trading.
You know what
Ben
it is?
Simmons.
It might also be like this fixation on the jump shot is kind of like Fultz related fallout, you know, like they have this real like PTSD from like, you know, just like shooting seems to be always on the forefront of a Philadelphia headline from their guards. But yeah, you know who else can't shoot? By the way, I wanted to sneak this in there. I went to a Lakers game over the break. I was out on the West Coast, you know, just like farting around in a car out in the West Coast.
Brian was making big deals for us out there, right? You're going to miss some. We're going to be in Space Jam 2. It's really exciting news.
Yes, we'll be the podcaster characters in Space Jam 2.
Oh, my God.
They should write those in somehow.
Yeah, just two lowly podcasters, like, following, like, a daily podcast about the Space Jam alien team.
Couple of takeaways from Staples Center. One, first and foremost, the urinals there are insane. It's not so much a urinal as like a stage for your junk. It's like, it's the most exposed I've ever felt in front of a urinal. Just small takeaway. I don't know what that's about. Could be a Cali thing. Second point, security doesn't exist. Like, it's just like going to Nets games and you're like crossing the demilitarized zone. And then you go to a Lakers game where it's, you know, completely sold out. And I just waltzed right in. I mean, we did like the little like, you know, metal detector thing, but there was no line. There was nothing like that. They're just like, yeah, go ahead. And there was no usher to check my ticket. I just, you know, went right to the seat. It was pretty remarkable. There's no person to like, you know, no crossing guard. That's like, you can't walk now. It just felt very civilized over there. So a couple little like management takeaways, but also, and we can get into this because there's like an email, a funny email that parlays into this nicely.
Ooh,
So let me just do that. It's your boy, and you deserve a John Cena drop like a million times over, but it's your boy, Sean Pinto. Hey guys, a question that is a little off the Nets topic, but about D'Angelo Russell and the Lakers, who are the better player duo now and long term, D'Lo and Randall, or Alonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram?
Ooh,
and having question. Like I think you can probably agree with this that you get a special sense for a player once you like kind of watch them live and you sort of see what they're about. I would be pretty concerned about Alonzo Ball if I were a Lakers fan. Not just like the crazy shooting stuff and like all the, you know, all of that stuff. The on-court stuff is a problem and stuff, but, and you know, I read into this heavily, body language, Mike. That guy is not interested. He does not want to be there. He wants that game to be over the second he walks onto the court. Doesn't want to be there.
And I'm like super shocked because I thought there would be, like with Lonzo, I understood that he wouldn't maybe be as great as Jason Tatum could possibly be at a certain level. And I still thought Fultz was a better prospect, maybe not now, but like Ball, I thought there was like a bare minimum, which was like, you know, Jason Kidd light, right? Like, which is like what every point guard you can't shoot gets compared to. I just thought he was going to be like, you know, he could have been like 13-7-4, like just that basic level. But then there'll be games that he has with the Lakers where he's just like an absolute non-factor, like an insane non-factor for a guy who's supposed to be as talented as he is.
100%. Like he was. So, and also to a certain extent, like Brandon Ingram is like the two of them is just not, that's not a high energy duo, despite like what you would think.
Well, do you know what Lonzo's free throw percentage is?
41%. I just looked.
41%. And
dude, they were openly booing him at the end of that game. It was the Thunder game. And it was like, I was like, damn, I have never like, that's rough. It's hard at your home games. You're getting booed when you miss a free throw. Like this is not good for this guy.
Well, and like, I wish I could like easily run this. I know there's sort of ways to figure it out, but like all time in terms of just point guards, just looking at the point guard position, that has to be the lowest, right? Or at least lowest, like per minutes per game. Like a guy who's a serious player in the NBA, he plays 30 minutes a game, which is as much as like D'Angelo Russell does. He's averaging 41% from the free throw line. What we have learned as basketball watchers over the past, let's say, 6 years. Is that free throw percentage is the best indicator for how you actually are as a shooter. Like, you have Draymond Green, who 1 year hits 39% from three, and now he's hitting like 29%. And your free throw percentage, for the most part, stays consistent with you throughout the rest of your career. You'll have a weird circumstance like Andre Drummond, who improves. He improved a lot last year. He's actually not doing as well this year. He's doing better than he had did before. Lonzo's shooting 41%. That is a beyond devastating number because that not only means that you're leaving points on the board. I mean, he's only shooting one free throw a game, which is also insane, but he's shooting one free throw a game because he's playing basketball in a way which he doesn't get fouled because
he's
afraid to get fouled.
He's afraid to go to the line, of course.
And like, so
self-perpetuating.
James Harden's been awesome, right? We all love James Harden. He travels all the time and he draws fouls and now we love him again because he's scoring a ton. But, like, James Harden, of course, has, like, 18 different facets to his game. But, like, the second biggest beyond a step-back three is that he draws fouls. Maybe it's the biggest, right? And if you're a ball-handling guard and you refuse to get fouled, if you just refuse to get fouled, and also, like, he's an okay three-point shooter, Lonzo is. He's 34%-ish, I think, something like that. But that number itself is like not that great. So where is he ever going to get his points from if he refuses to go to the line and he's like not that good of a three-point shooter? Like, then where does that leave you? So that question by Sean Pinto, I love it. And I kind of – we talked about this earlier in the year before the season. Like, there's a lot of buzz. People wanted Julius Randle to come to the Nets. Like, that was like a hot – sort of free agent name in terms of Nets fandom, right? It wasn't like leaked or anything, but that's sort of what was talked about. I was against it because I don't think at the time I was like, you don't want to create just like a Lakers East situation. That team with D'Angelo and Randall and Ingram wasn't that good. You don't want like just to bring another guy from that team over. But Julius Randall's been awesome this year. D'Angelo's the best player out of all. I mean, isn't I mean, D'Angelo's better than Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball for sure. I don't know if he's better than Randle, but I think D'Angelo impacts a game more than Julius Randle does. That's a great question, but the answer is obviously you'd rather have D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle. And if that's the answer, then like really how smart is Lakers management, right? That they cast off the two guys that are definitely probably better at this point and kept the two worse options, at least the young options at this where they are right now.
Yeah. I mean, and the only solution to Lonzo Ball's woes would be to go full like 2014 Rondo or whatever and like be averaging 13 assists on top of this, but I don't think he's capable of even that. You know,
he's not capable of it because he plays with LeBron. Like he'll never get that opportunity playing with LeBron.
Totally.
There's a super fun thing that's been happening. So like the Anthony Davis, will he be traded conversation is also growing sort of within the national media. But then sort of like below that conversation is then who could the Pelicans get? And people are saying that like Anthony Davis to the Lakers makes a lot of sense because he's a clutch sports client. You know, obviously the Lakers have a tradition of bringing in like the best big men in the league. That's just their kind of like pedigree. But what would like a trade of Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram really get you at this point? Like it would get you a nice piece. It would get you like CJ McCollum, but I don't think it would get you Anthony Davis. Like unless if Anthony Davis said, I want to go to LA, this is the only thing that would, that I'm going to accept. Of course that would do it. But like Lonzo and Brandon Ingram together are not, I don't know. The Lakers trade to improve the team, it's not as much out there as it used to be, so, particularly before the season when they wouldn't even put Brandon Ingram in a Kawhi Leonard conversation. And now Kawhi, you know, is like a top seven player in the NBA again. Mm-hmm. But the Nets, Brian.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
yeah. Heck yeah.
So I kind of wanted to run through like some of the differences about why the Nets are so good, man. I mean, there's three distinct things that I think you can point to, and maybe four if you include D'Angelo Russell playing a little bit better. But I mean, to me, the biggest thing is like, so we saw that Chicago win, right? The Chicago win on Sunday before the Celtics game. That was to me the biggest indicator that this team is super duper, like actually legit, actually a competing team, because that's a game that most bad teams would lose. It's on the road. It's before a game where you play the Celtics, where you should be excited to play the Celtics, right? There should be a level where you're looking over the Bulls. It's a classic trap game. And they just go in there like completely handle business. That was so unfamiliar to see, you know? Mm. Just to like watch a Nets team that was so confident in beating a bad team. That hasn't happened that much around here.
Yeah, the like just sort of closing out the game that's been eluding us the whole season, and especially in that Grizzlies and Pelicans game. I'm reminded of the moment in the Grizzlies game where Jared Dudley had to take that last time out and like with 45 seconds to go. I don't know if you were paying close attention to that, but that was the one time I mean, generally, I'm pretty forgiving of Kenny Atkinson. People gripe about Kenny Atkinson's in-game decisions like all the time, like super hard. And up to this point, it's been like, I don't know. But there's a couple times in the last couple games where I've been like, okay, like you need to start like making really good decisions now, because suddenly, you know, there's something at stake here. And if Jared Dudley is the guy that's like feeling the vibe of that timeout better than you are, like you may have some problems going forward. But he's still a young coach. We have to give him this room to grow himself, Mike. We've given him the keys to the car here, and he's got to have some opportunity to like grow and do those things himself.
Do you think of, obviously this is a debate that's raging. What do you think about D'Angelo basically not playing at the end of games? I mean, he's actually pretty recently, the past few games, he has been on the court at the end of the game, but for the most part, he's put on the bench.
Yeah.
If he were on the floor and they lost the game, but he was getting more reps at being sort of an end-of-the-game guy, would you prefer that over what's happening, which is him being on the bench? him not getting the reps, but them winning? Like, what's, like, I guess.
I think it's kind of confusing because, like, he, yeah. So, like, I'm, like, even just, like, it's not whether I agree or disagree. I'm just trying to, like, think of the motivation behind it. And it seems to me that, like, basically Atkinson likes to go, like, because we're the most driving team in the NBA, statistically speaking, and I don't have that in front of me, but someone recently was talking about how, like, the Nets, you know, lead by a fairly wide margin in just driving. And so that seems to suggest to me, especially late game, that we're going to want to be driving the ball. And D'Angelo Russell, for all of his great play lately, still not going to be, like, the premium, like, late game driving force like Spencer Dinwiddie would be, and the late Caris LeVert would be. But it seems like, I mean, it just seems like he's playing those statistical games like a little bit too heavily. Like, you can, yeah, you can hedge that a little bit more. Like, you can also tell, like, hey, D'Angelo, why don't you just, like, drive in the last 2 minutes more, you know? Because he's not, like, incapable of doing it. It's just not his, like, go-to sensibility. So, I mean, I can't, that's what I've parsed out for, like, the motivation behind it. I don't know how strong of an argument that is, but I can't really understand it outside of that. Do you have a special insight into that or no?
I mean, it seems obvious to me that, like, Atkinson doesn't trust D'Angelo at all on defense. And but there's been weird moments where he's put in another guard to go with Spencer Dinwiddie, and the other guards like Shabazz Napier or sort of like Travion Graham, who has now been inserted back in the lineup. But this happened earlier in the year where, like, Travion Graham would play instead of D'Angelo. I just, like, it's a hard thing because the Nets are playing so well, right? And, like, this is a moment we've been waiting for so very, very long. But there's a little shadow hanging over it that, like, this moment is happening. Yes, D'Angelo is playing well. Like, I think he's, like in the four games in January, he's averaging, like, 20-8, which is awesome. It's weird that the guy that's supposed to be carrying your team, like, even with Caris LeVert, still should be D'Angelo Russell, that he cannot really be the closer for your team, that Dinwiddie's still more trusted, and you put Joe Harris in there, and they want to have either Jared Dudley or Caruso in there. Sometimes they want a center, sometimes they don't. Just depends on what they do. Damari's usually pretty trusted at the end of games. I still haven't heard, like, a really good explanation from Atkinson. I mean, he's talked about it a bunch, but he hasn't, like, we just haven't heard distinctly why D'Angelo isn't there at the end of the games. And we've become so conditioned as Nets watchers to be like, oh yeah, D'Angelo just won't play at the end of the game. Like, the Nets have sort of they play a lot of their bench players, and people are trusted to be put in different situations. We don't have a star system. D'Angelo is technically the Nets' star, but he doesn't get treated like that because that's just how the Nets run their organization. And so yes, it's accepted that D'Angelo won't play at the end of the game, but, like, shouldn't he? Like, shouldn't he be playing at the end? Like, even if he screws up sometimes, like, even defensively, like, don't you want to put him out there to make him learn from that? And he's not learning about his defensive inefficiencies by being on the bench. Now, here's the one other thing, too, we've never talked about, is that he's handled all of this, like, extremely well. And when he got traded to the Nets, the big shadow hanging over him was that, like, he was a bad teammate. And Atkinson talked about it recently, where I think Brian Lewis from the Post asked Atkinson about how, you know, coming over from the Lakers, D'Angelo had this reputation. What has he been like to coach? And Atkinson said he's a 10 out of 10. He said, like, he's a person that you need to explain to him why you're doing something, but if you do that correctly, he'll totally accept it. He just needs to hear the answer, which is, like, something I completely accept. But so he's handled everything, like, fantastically. Even when they were losing, he still was seemingly handling being benched at the end of games fine. It's just a weird Nets thing that I think we're going to have to grapple with within this, like, Mark's Atkinson administration, right? Like, they're going to do things that aren't sort of logical. They do things based on maybe the statistics of it, like you're saying, but they don't do necessarily, like, you know what, this guy's the best player on the team, or should be. We should just leave him in at the end of the games, and hopefully that he grows out of not being that great at the end of the games defensively. I mean, he really is he's a bad defender. It's pretty stunning how bad he can be at times defensively.
Do you want to talk about your first impressions of your boy Trevion Graham?
I kind of like him.
What do you like so far? You like that he's shooting like 1 for 18? I know.
Someone tweeted that. I think I tweeted out how like Trevion Graham's the best player on the floor or something like that. But the someone tweeted at me, "Do you like Mr. 1 for 10? And I was like, you know what? I do. I do like him. I think he's got like a nice. He sort of knows what he's doing out there. He's got a nice like body to him. You know, like he seems like he can like handle like a defensive assignment pretty well against a lot of different positions. It is interesting that they're just like giving him minutes immediately. I know there's injuries, but like they're just giving him minutes when he's not that super talented. But I'm fine with him. I think he's a good like 14th player to have on your roster. If he was on this team like 2 years ago, he would have been playing 30 minutes a game.
You can feel though that they're trying to work him into this rotation with a fairly heavy hand at this point. I mean, those minutes are just going up and up and up. And the moment that it starts encroaching on Rodion's Kurek's minutes is the moment I start flipping tables. Okay.
I'm in love with Rodion's. By the way, just to let everyone know in Nets Nation, I've been DMing Rodion's agent. I'm trying to get Rodion's on the show. So we're working on it. It may not happen until February. We are working on it very hard. Because of course we want Karutz to be on the show. We hopefully to have him as a weekly guest. That's the ultimate goal, I think, right, Brian?
I mostly just want to talk about like playing basketball in Latvia, Latvian customs, you know, various things to do in Latvia.
Various things to do in Latvia. So what's interesting about Rodion's is like, so like when you look at his statistics, they're not like that impressive, right? They're 9, it's like 9-4 and like less than 1 assist per game. But I think it's just the simple fact that like he wasn't playing at all and then you insert him and he is productive. That little like difference from 0 to something makes a difference between losing and winning a lot of the time.
You know what I like about Rodion's career? Because I like his little, like, Delaware County-style goatee. Like, he looks like a guy. He looks like a guy I know. I can't quite place him, though.
Would have been his favorite
band? He
looks
like he played a lot of hacky sack, but he's not. He was in Latvia, but, like, he could have definitely, like, skateboarded, you know, in Philadelphia for a few years.
What would have been, if he was growing up when we were growing up, what would have been his favorite band in middle school into high school?
Well, so if he was in our age range, it'd have been like 311 or something. It'd have been something in that spectrum.
To me, I go more like Linkin Park. Is that not?
That's good. That could be good.
We'll have to ask Rodion's about that.
Or if he's got a little bit more edge to him, like CKY, just because he watched a lot of Dan Margera footy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Out there in Delco.
Rodion's has been ascendant. The bench has been awesome. I mean, it's so weird to talk about this team now because, like, just a month ago, or a little over a month ago, it was pretty hard to talk about them, and it was super depressing. But now, every single, like, it's almost not even discussed anymore that Caris LeVert's out with an injury. Just not, it's not in the conversation. And, like, Alan Crabb now has a fat cap injury, the deadly fat cap, I think that's what it's called. So he's out.
How are your fat caps doing, by the way? Have you checked lately?
They're pretty fatty.
Yeah. You got plenty of cushion for the pushing, huh?
Plenty of cushion. And then, like, Rondé's out. Well, the good thing is, like, Demare's been fantastic. I think he's averaging, like, 52% from 3 in January, which, again, I know it's early in January, but it's just, like, insane to see Demare. And, like, they really needed Demare. I mean, that was really one of the large missing pieces early in the season when they weren't doing that well, was that, like, Demare was super relied upon last year, and he was bad at coming out of that injury to start the season. Like, seemed to have no lift at all. Looked like the injured Demare from Toronto that they wanted to get rid of so badly. But he's just
hitting every implausible runner that he comes across.
It's awesome. You know what's weird about that Memphis game was that, like, the Nets obviously played well. They beat Memphis, but, like, it was one of the few times where I feel like the Nets got lucky because, like, Connolly had some open three looks that, like, I feel like in the losing streak they would have hit, that the Grizzlies would have hit, but yet against the Nets now is their, like, basically winning streak, they missed. That, like, that those coin flip things are now going the Nets' way, and it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Let's just have fun. Do you want to go right into the killer comparison, or we can do some more emails really quick and then do it, or what do you want to do?
Let's do, if there's like one or two quick emails, I'm good, or we can just do killer. I'm fine with doing killer.
I just want to do, we've got two new guys that we haven't heard from, and I want to get some new guys in the rotation. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Quick one from Chiboy Bilal Galani. Shout out to Chiboy. Usually shy away from being a fan GM, was too bored at my second to last day at work. Hey, congrats on leaving the job. Heard about how the Hornets are desperate to move on from Batum. The Nets could free up even more cap space. The Hornets get out of Batum's contract and maybe convince Vucevic and Kemba to stick around, or they leave and save a ton of money. The Magic inevitably get screwed, but there are ways... Oh, sorry. I should do the trade first. It's not making any sense. Here's the trade that he does. Nets in this trade get Terrence Ross, Frank Kaminsky. Hornets get Alan Crabb, Nikola Vucevic, and Magic get Nicholas Batum. I think it's a fun one. I mean, here's what I like is... And this is going to be mean, but I think a lot of our recent success can be attributed to a lack of Alan Crabb. That's hard. That's a harsh thing to say. Maybe not a lot of our success, but I don't think it's a coincidence that this is taking place with those fatty caps getting a rest.
Well, it's because he was playing well before those fatty caps came right at him. You know what I'm saying? So
don't
like,
do that. Don't do that.
No. So this is what I'm going to say. I apologize for coughing. Basically, if Alan Crabb is not playing well, he should not be playing. And I'm not saying like you would bench him immediately if he misses three threes. I know it doesn't work that way. But like if he's playing well, the Nets are probably doing well. And if he's not in the game at all, then he's not a negative. Because when he's missing his five threes a game, when he's missing all of them, and then he's, you know, not doing anything else for you, that is such a void. That's just like a vacuum. It doesn't get filled by anything. It just sucks up everything. But because he had been playing well, then he got hurt and isn't playing, he is not a negative. He's just not there. And someone else is filling his role, Damari, you know, Rondé when he was healthy, more Joe Harris, more D'Angelo, more Dinwiddie, all of those things, more Napier. Napier is like a more consistent player than Crabb. He does more things for you. You'd probably rather have Alan Crabb playing more regular minutes for you because he has a chance of being this great three-point threat, but he most likely isn't. So, just, I'm with you that Alan Crabb is crucial to this win streak, as in he's not a part of it. But I also, it's just, you know, when he plays well or he doesn't play, that's good. If he plays poorly, that really drags on the team.
Good. Last one quick. Andrew Bishoping. Or wait, do you want to just do the trade thing? Or like the idea that we're trading Alan Crabb, do you want to just broach that quickly or no?
Nah, I mean, no. It's just not going to happen. I mean, that's not going to happen. But thank you.
Thank you, Bilal. Don't hesitate to write in again. We love those trade machines. I know Mike normally loves them, but we're just in a rush, for God's sakes. We got a baby on the crying. Chiboy Andrew Bishoping says, hey guys, been listening for 3 years now. Love the pod. Love you back, dog. Including the Vanderpump tidbits. Have you been watching, Mike?
Yeah, I missed this past episode, so I apologize greatly. But I did watch.
You're a bum.
I was watching Lisa Vanderpump on Watch What Happens Live, so I have something.
A little bit. Is it me or was the Barclays actually loud Wednesday night for that win versus Charlotte? This is from 11 days ago, by the way. If the Nets make a real playoff run, do you think the home court will be rocking? I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I absolutely do because
rocking is a spectrum, and having just been at the Staples Center, I got to tell you, I'm not. Here's what I like about the Barclays Center: very active top upper deck, super inactive lower bowl, and the Lakers lower bowl is like where all the like old heads who are like super aggro and hostile are hanging out, and that's the difference. It's that big. You know, lower bowl, upper bowl shift. Right?
Yeah. But
yeah, go ahead.
No, but I think, I mean, I mean, there's like a segment of the basketball viewing population in New York that like swings between Knicks and Nets fans. You don't think there is, but there is. There's like this like little group of guys who, or you know, women and guys, whatever, that like to watch playoff basketball games. There's like an energy that they transfer over, whether the Knicks are good or the Nets are good. It's small, but it's there. And I think because the Knicks are so bad, and I don't know if you saw this, but James Dolan did an interview with some hockey writers, and he talked about how his team isn't tanking. Neither of his teams, the Rangers or the Knicks, but he sort of admitted, he said that the fans want that guy from Duke, which is obviously Zion Williamson, and he may get in trouble for that. He also said the Knicks don't have a star in their team, which would be Kristaps Porzingis, but I guess he's not a star. But I think because the Knicks are so bad, the Nets, if they make the playoffs, would be pretty good. I think this basketball energy that New York City harnesses would shift to the Nets. And there would be like a boost of energy that would happen in the playoffs. It would just,
yeah. I mean, obviously it'll dissipate. Improve. I'm talking about like, you know, how many factors, how many multipliers are we talking? Like, obviously it's going to get better, like as they get better, but are we like a few years away? Like if we have this like title run or whatever in like 5 years or whatever, are we going to have like a super lit parade? You know, I don't know. Hard to imagine.
Yeah. If they win one game of the playoffs, the city should hold a parade for the team. That's what I think.
Okay. Killer comparison time, Mike. Tell everybody what we're doing.
Killer comparisons is a game that we play.
Not the rules. Just give me...
I know.
Always the rules.
So what we're doing today? So the sort of the
it's not even a game. It's really an activity.
The inspiration for this activity was Mick Foley, aka Mankind, attended a Long Island Nets game. He was up on the big screen. Mick Foley, if you don't know it, again, was Mankind, one of the greatest wrestlers from our youthful generation. So what we're doing now is we're going to compare NBA franchises to as if they were pro wrestlers, you know, which sort of the vibe of the pro wrestler, the energy, how they were on the, you know, all that stuff to the fan base and the actual team itself.
Well, was the impetus for this because Mankind is sort of the perfect comparison to the Nets?
He is, right?
I personally feel that, yeah, just because, like, he's known for taking big bumps, like, just general anguish and misfortune, and but still somehow, like, rises to intermittent success.
And it's also, like, Mankind is just naturally disadvantaged, right? Like, he is one of the most unathletic, seemingly unathletic wrestlers they've ever had.
The body of Mick Foley is, like, I would say it as accurately as I can be, it's probably, like, 35% butt, like it's like that much butt,
and like 20% head, like his head. Yeah, he had a large head with hair and hair, like hair all over the place, and then he had a belly. It was a butt, a belly, and a head, and that was his body. Yeah. And he was still I mean, obviously steroids are probably still a thing in wrestling. I don't know. I can't tell you, but he was of an era when every athlete was using steroids. Just every athlete was using it. But yet he stood out because he was slovenly, Brian. So he is disadvantaged. He's starting at a disadvantage, like the Nets. The Nets have this disadvantage that they created themselves so many years ago in the Billy King trade with the Boston Celtics. So the Nets and Mankind have had to operate in a world where they don't have a level playing field. But yet Mankind was one of the... Seriously, I mean, like, when I was growing up, it was him and The Rock, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of the reason why I say that is because those are the two autobiographies I read of wrestlers growing up. You had to have the Mankind autobiography.
I have a copy of Have a Nice Day here, like, right next to me, by the way.
Yeah. So he still ascended to a certain level of fame, a massive level of fame. The Nets obviously aren't there yet, but they are using their disadvantage. Their disadvantage was no draft picks, and saying we're not going to tank. We're going to use our fat bodies, our fat unathletic bodies, and you know, and say, well, we're going to grow in a different way. We're going to bring in good guys. We're going to bring in people who sort of distress assets that we still think we can make something out of, and we're going to create an environment like Mick Foley did during his matches, for which he could still succeed. Foley decided to use that environment to jump off of steel cages and bleed all over himself, which was super dope. And he's the greatest of all time.
So, okay, so everyone gets it. What's the next one?
So I'm going to go with the San Antonio Spurs, and this is sort of just like on the most basic level, the exact, like some of them are more obtuse.
The perfect answer for this, by the way.
Give me yours.
You go first, but then I'll, okay. The correct answer for this is Bret Hart. It's the perfect.
Interesting.
Old head who's like doing everything by the book, successful, but like everyone's like, it's Bret Hart again. Okay, great. Like, do your like good guy, you know, by the books thing, Bret, great. And and that's year in, year out how the Spurs are. Just, you know, star quality, storied franchise that like, meh, all right, fine. It's the Spurs. It's Bret Hart.
So I go Undertaker.
Yeah. Good. Another good one. Another good one.
You know, has stood the test of time. One of the longest careers of any wrestler, longest relevant careers of any wrestler. I mean, even the Undertaker and Duncan share just like physically tall, not tall men who don't talk. And
the only team with a tall man in this whole.
Yes, exactly. And you know, even almost the color scheme, if you think, you know, the black and the gray, and they both sure. Undertaker took that, of course.
There's like hints of purple in there. It could have been more perfect with the Kings. But yeah.
Right. But the Undertaker was too competent. Yeah. The Undertaker is one of the, you know, again, one of the sort of landmark wrestlers over a long period of time who really didn't deviate all that much from sort of the path and has just stood the test of time, like the Spurs. Mm. Who is your next guy?
Who you got next?
Will you go next? I'll give you the next one.
All right, let's just get the big ones out of the way. Lakers. Who do you have for the Lakers?
I have The Rock.
Yeah.
I know.
I have, yeah.
Well, it's not interesting. It's just like the biggest star, the biggest team. The Rock was, not only are they the biggest team, they are, you know, legitimately probably the best franchise in the history of basketball. Like, I guess you could say the Celtics, right? But I would say the Lakers. The Rock is, you know, besides Hogan, the biggest star, but probably is now the biggest star to ever come out of wrestling. But he also was a very, like, while he was a wrestler, was, like, a complete, you know, phenomenon, too, at the time. It wasn't just, like, he was a wrestler, then became an actor, and then became a huge actor. Didn't just, like, spur out of sort of nowhere. He was a massive wrestler, like the Lakers were our massive team in the history of basketball. But they're just, like, bigger than that, and The Rock is bigger than wrestling.
So I went in a slightly different direction. So I'm using, like, just this year's Lakers as my point of comparison here. And I went with Paul Donald White II, a.k.a. the Big Show. I clicked on his wiki, if you can't tell. Born February 8th, 1972, Paul Donald White. The reason I picked the Big Show is because, you know, in the world of kayfabe lore, Big Show is kind of known as, like, one of the best company men for kind of, like, going down on his back, right? He was always, like, a great way to leverage other up-and-comers, because you could throw out this guy who's a vet. He's, you know, physically very impressive and, you know, for that reason demands everyone's respect. But he's very helpful in elevating other people's careers. And that's how I kind of feel of the Lakers right now. Everyone feels good about beating them, but they're really not that good. You know, they're kind of just a bit of show at the moment, not to, you know, lay in too heavily on the name synergy here. But for, like, you know, when the Nets beat the Lakers, it's like, yeah, awesome, great. Like, we're going places now. But it should not be seen as beating a LeBron James team from 5 years ago or whatever.
That's a really good one. And I love that thinking. Yes.
Great.
I'll go next. The Clippers. Do you have a Clipper?
Yeah, I have a weird one for this one. I went hardcore Holly on this one. just because, like, I think of them as, like, still, despite everything, like, a middling, you know, mid-card talent, you know. But this iteration of the Clippers are just, it just feels like it's full of, like, kind of like psychos and jerks. And I know that Hardcore Holly behind the scenes was like one of the bigger jerks to grace the company. So yeah, I mean that's just where I went with that one. I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, so I went with John Cena because
wow, different.
So I went with The Rock for the Lakers, which is basically Clippers want to be the Lakers and John Cena wants to be the Rock.
Big names. You're not going to give me any deep cuts, are you? That's what you're going to do.
The problem is I told you this before the pod, like I pretty much like all wrestlers. So I don't have like a negative. John Cena is like the only one I don't vibe with. So I don't really have.
But you're not going to give me names like, I'm not going to hear Psychosis or something, right? You're not going to go deep cuts from WCW versus NWO World Tour.
No, and I looked up some names and I was like, I can't do it. Like I can't go that far deep. I can't. I would love to.
I can't talk extensively about Billy Kidman in the Cruiserweight Championship.
I was a lame kid who wore the NWO shirt. So I followed the big stars.
Well, that's an awesome kid. What are you talking about?
Yeah, of course. So as John Cena wants to be like The Rock, the Clippers want to be like the Lakers, and John Cena tries to be like The Rock in every way possible, and like the Clippers try to be like the Lakers, but it's not happening. It's not going to happen. It's not happening. There's just something off about both the Clippers and John Cena. Mm.
Good.
The next team I have are the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go Bruno Sammartino.
Good.
Only because he was a huge wrestler in the 70s. That was the last time the Knicks, I guess, were really, really
got him
relevant. And doesn't Bruno Sammartino sound like a guy who would sit at the 400 level at MSG and watch Knicks
roasted
games?
Get the body bags. You just got roasted.
Boom.
Doubling down on this roast, I went Chris Benoit. Should I not even get into it?
No, get into it.
No, that's fine. Everyone understands.
Everyone understands
the comparison. It's a bad situation over there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Give me another team you got.
Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, okay. I don't have them. What do you have for that?
I went also with a similarly dark humor route. Like Jake the Snake now, like 2019 Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just cause he's like decrepit, you know, and just telling a lot of, he's just making his rounds on podcasts, like telling stories about the good old days when he was, you know, winning stuff and partying hard. And now he's just like talking to Joe Rogan.
The last one I have, and you may have more than me, but I have, Oklahoma City Thunder. This is pure look. This is pure vibe. This is nothing about really the franchises. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's good. That's a good one.
I just feel like there's at least...
Dude, watching Russell Westbrook troll the crowd at the Staples Center was amazing. I've never... He's so fun to watch in that way.
Well, and so he kind of has that Stone Cold vibe to him, right? It's like
100%.
The FU stomping around like a sort of a petulant child in a way, but like... I'm there for that. I'm not against that kind of vibe, especially if he's like someone I root for.
Dude, he in that game, it was actually kind of perfectly Stone Cold because he like straight like rage stormed a ref in a way that would get 99.9% of players ejected from a game. But for some reason, like nothing came of it, and it was like I was like that's a perfect, because like Stone Cold would have done the same. It would have, you know, Stone Cold stunned a referee and like drank a beer and nothing would have come of it.
You could see Stone Cold Steve Austin sitting courtside at a Thunder game wearing the same outfit that he wore as a wrestler, and it would feel like he's part of the fabric of the fan base.
just jean shorts. I always love it when he's like Stone Cold's like he's walking into the arena and he's just got jorts on and like white black. Like white New Balances with white like perfect dad on a weekend get up. And this is like the hard, bad, you know, MF-er that we're supposed to. It's just jorts and a pair of New Balances, crispy white New Balances.
Well, it was a very weird time in wrestling, because like you had him and then you had Goldberg. Again, I'm Jewish, so Goldberg was like, I was ride or die. But also like, it literally looked as bland. He was muscular, right? But like he was just like a bland, bald, goateed man. And he just wore, like, that was it. That was his vibe. But somehow he became a big star, too. Do you have anyone else?
Yeah, but nothing good. So let's end it there.
One quick thing. Why the Nets? I just seen this on Twitter now. Why Nets fans? We're going to put a pin on this conversation. Why Nets fans should be happy that Jimmy Butler is not a Net. I'm seeing on Twitter from Kurt Wears Hats that Jimmy Butler is walking. There's a picture of him walking into the whatever arena he's going to for the game. He has a cup of coffee in his hand. Okay. On the coffee is a symbol of his own brand. Jimmy Butler. It's JB. Okay. If you have your, if you make your own coffee cups with your logo on it, there's some kind of wrong about you, Brian. You know what I'm saying? There's some, there's that's some next level. I'll say it again. Mark Wahlberg stuff. Can't just have that a regular cup, right?
That
you can't
is
get it.
Wahlbergian for sure. Wahlbergian. And also, drinking coffee before a game is putting a lot of faith in your bowels. I'll say that much.
Okay. I think we should end it there. That's perfect.
Time good.
All right, close this out. Thank you all for listening. There's a lot of intriguing games coming up. Of course, you know the Nets are 20-22. There's a couple of big Eastern Conference matchups. The next three games: the Atlanta Hawks, the Toronto Raptors, and Boston Celtics. Again, we'll be with you. We'll be here talking to you. This playoff push as it comes along. Brian, thank you for talking to me.
We'll be with you. We'll be here. That's where we'll be. Sorry. Bye, everybody. Got him.
Yeah, boy!